Hello, everyone. This is Jose Palomino, CEO of Value Prop Interactive, and your host on Business Growth on Purpose. And today's guest is Kim Wolf of Kim Wolf Consulting. And Kim is a specialist in continuous improvement. And unless you think that's just about manufacturing, like what's on the manufacturing floor, it's a much broader topic. She has some great ideas on how to leverage the opportunities at this moment in time in history, right now, what's happening now with tight supply chains, with customers being demanding and needing from you, but also suppliers that you depend on, that whole chain, how to leverage the moment to create even more success, to create real, genuine win-wins with you and your trading partners on both sides, people you buy from, people you sell to. So listen carefully as Kim joins us for Business Growth on Purpose. Well, welcome, Kim, to the Business Growth on Purpose show. I'm so happy you could be with us.
Thank you so much. It's been great to get to know you over social media, Jose, and to see all the great things within Manufacturing Masters that you've been involved in. So thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure, and likewise. I always like to give my audience context directly from my guests. So what do you do primarily, and who do you do it for?
So I do it for my own business, Kim Wolf Leadership Coaching and Manufacturing Consulting. I've worked in manufacturing for many, many years. I'm a mechanical engineer by trade. So started off as a plant engineer and then moved into some maintenance manager and engineering manager roles. Ultimately, I wanted to be a plant manager. So the company I was working for at the time said, you need ops experience. So I was an ops manager and really worked for a person who really gave me a lot of freedom to try different things and really develop my leadership skills. And then I did become a plant manager. And ultimately, I was a vice president of global operations for a couple of companies. And then I realized that what I really loved doing in all of those roles was developing people. That was really the thing that got me jazzed, you know, that I felt so much job satisfaction from. So I started doing some teaching at a local college here and then realized that, yes, this is what I want to do full time. So have moved into leadership coaching and manufacturing consulting. And because of all the changes in the world the last couple of years, and so much of what we do now is virtual. So I've been able to really expand and go beyond just my local geographic area. So I'm working with some customers really all over North America and really loving what I do.
Wow. Well, first of all, it's always for me, I always like to congratulate anybody who has found that lane where they can be their most authentic self, where they can actually have the most joy in what they do. There's probably a lot you can do once you've had a career at a certain point, but it's great when you can start choosing what you want to narrow your focus in on, the stuff that gives you the most satisfaction, and probably the people you serve the most satisfaction getting that help from you. So that's it's a very nice feedback loop there.
Yes, thank you so much. I feel very blessed to be able to do what I do, for sure.
Wow. Well, you know, one thing, and of course we both serve a lot of our time and energy is with manufacturers. And, you know, I brought in that always a little bit to say industrial companies, because if people provide industrial services, I have some of the same issues. But manufacturing distinctly, uniquely, you know, whether it's a contract manufacturer or an OEM, especially in the privately held arena, it might be a small product line or something, but they actually go into market with that. Mm-hmm. They're all facing, everybody I just mentioned are facing, as is everyone in the world, but they in particular, pressure from what we read about every day, supply chain issues and labor shortages, especially in the blue collar trades and so on. They just can't find the people. They can't often get the material and so on. And yet, in talking to folks, they're telling me, yeah, but it's also been the best year ever. We're booming. We're getting orders in and uh-huh. so on. So I'd like for you to comment just a little bit in terms of how you help people deal with supply chain shortages, because you can't also go to your backyard and roll more steel for them. So that's that's not how you're going to solve the problem. So what are some of the things you do to help people who are feeling like, I'm getting all these orders, but my challenge now is filling all these orders. And it's a supply chain. They've identified it as a supply chain problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so funny to me because that term supply chain is something that we hear on the news every day. And yet, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, I don't think any of those news media outlets had any idea what supply chain even was. And in some cases, I still think they're not exactly sure. I mean, for our world in manufacturing, supply chain is everything is from your secondary suppliers all the way through to your second tier customers and everything in between. And I'm not sure that the media, as they talk about supply chain, you know, really understands the scope and the complexity that a supply chain of any business really faces. So one of the things that I talk with a lot of my clients about as we're working through some of these issues, whether they think that they're in a good spot, because some of them are. I mean, some of them are seeing, you know, volume growth, profit growth. And then there's others that are stable, which in this world, in this environment, can be a success story all in itself. Mm-hmm. But even if you're in what would be considered to be a positive environment right now, my belief is if you don't do something consciously to continue to make that happen, that could all go away. And those are the things that I find are really keeping a lot of senior leaders of organizations up at night, you know, thinking about what's coming next. How long is this going to go on? And I've seen some quotes out of Wall Street Journal over the last few months that really talks about, you know, it's going to be at minimal the last quarter of 2022. And I think that's a very optimistic perspective until we start to see some of these supply chain issues stabilize a little bit. So in my mind, I think that companies really need to get creative in what their models look like, their supply chain models. And I know many of us who have grown up in manufacturing for many years, like you have, really, we tried to reach that just-in-time model. And we always said that manufacturers who were successful with just-in-time, where you're managing your inventory costs, you know, you're managing your finished product cost and storage and the logistics piece of it, and doing it just as orders come in. That was something we all tried to work for and strive to attain. I'm not sure right now that's the best model. And I think that it's forcing manufacturers to really think creatively beyond that traditional model that we've all, you know, tried to attain. And it's really, we really are going to have to change some of our inventory levels. Raw materials, in some cases, are harder and harder to come by. Even if it's available, just getting it to your facility at the right time, whether that's because of transportation issues, whether that's because of raw material issues that your supplier is having, there's lots of reasons why, but that having that consistent supply into our manufacturers is really questionable right now. So we are not able to go to our customers and say, oh, sorry, our suppliers have not given us the materials we need. So sorry, we can't give you the finished products that you ordered. You know, that doesn't fly. So we're having to get creative. And I think that's going to force us to work outside of those traditional models that we have set up when we're looking at, you know, our inventory levels and supplies. You know, having maybe instead of having one or even two primary and secondary suppliers, we may have to go beyond that. We may have to look for, you know, additional suppliers. And that means more than just, you know, going through the yellow pages, so to speak, and, you know, finding somebody who does that, but, you know, identifying them, qualifying them, and then giving them a chance to do some business with you as well to make sure that there's something in it for them. You know, you can't expect suppliers to just kind of sit around and wait for you to call. So all of those things are actions that I think most manufacturers should be looking at and challenging themselves beyond that traditional model.
Well, what's interesting about that, even the phrase traditional model, right? So when Elihu Golrat wrote The Goal, I guess that was like almost 40 years ago at this point, that prior to then, people would sit on inventories. I mean, that was traditional. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, and if you rereading that, and I actually did my MBA in systems thinking, right? So I had a chance to revisit The Goal again 20 years later. And he talks about buffers, like buffer inventory. So some people took just-in-time so to the extreme. They said, oh, if that has this profit contribution effect, let's take it to the max. And supply chains just started running so lean and tight. And I actually believe some of those secondary and tertiary suppliers are actually buying from the same weak link on the chain. They're just putting their label on it.
That's right.
It's when I was a little kid, I just love this little story because it just reminds me about a lot of things. I was a little kid with my mother going to the post office. And then, you know, I was, I don't know, maybe 8 years old, you know, yo high. And they had on the wall slots for out of state, out of the country, in state and so on. So I was small enough to peek in through the slots and they all went to the same basket. They did. So you had these people sorting the mail, like customers thinking it's something's going to happen because I put it in this slot or that slot, and they're all going to the same basket, which really is mind-boggling. I'll never forget that. So I think some of the supply chain issues is we're all going to the same basket. But what you're talking about here, though, is you have to say, okay, this is a real thing. It isn't going to just self-correct. And if you're running a manufacturing concern, you have to be proactive and thinking through how are we going to deal with this. I might be stocking more raw material than I would like to stock. That my controller's not going to like that because that ties up cash off the balance sheet. But the difference is I won't be able to take orders if I can't tell them what people are going to be able to get.
Exactly. And you talk about affecting the bottom line. That will do it for
that
sure.
That will do it. Right. So you know, sometimes it is triage, like, okay, that's a bad thing, but this is a worse thing. Uh-huh. And you have to start thinking about that. So what other things? I know you do a lot of work in continuous improvement. Uh-huh. Is this a time for companies, manufacturing concerns, to start thinking about, hey, can we be more efficient in how we operate? Or do we just like, hey, leave things alone with getting new orders? Let's just be happy, cash checks, and hope for the best.
Yeah, you know, I think for a long period of time, you know, there were so many unknowns out there about this new world that we're living in, that and people just thought, well, I'm not going to invest, you know, my time or my resources or my money into, you know, exploring any of those other things because we just don't know how long this is going to go on for. I think we can now confidently say this is not going away anytime soon. So I think that's why I have been busier than ever. Because companies are realizing, oh my gosh, we need to do something about this. And we don't really even know where to start. And I think that in itself is a great first step, just to say we need to do something different in order to have a plan, you know, that we're in control of and that we're not just being a victim of from our suppliers or from our transportation carriers. We know that many of our retail customers and even OEMs are looking at, you know, saying, look, we're not going to take all this extra cost on ourselves. So, yes, we understand your raw materials are going to cost more. Your storage is going to cost more. Your transportation is going to cost more. But you need to do something different to keep those costs down. So, you know, a lot of customers and consumers are demanding that manufacturers be the ones that actually come in and try to mitigate some of those additional costs so that we're not just passing everything along because it will get to the point where it's not sustainable to do that anymore. So, so I think the engineer in me is very systems oriented. And so I'm all about using tools and using CI tools, Lean, Six Sigma, all of those things. And again, that can become overwhelming when you're, you know, your business is to make a product, not necessarily right. to you know, be experts in all of these things. So that's where I could come in. And the two tools that I really recommend to my clients to pull out of your toolbox at this point in time is a SWOT analysis. So the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats tool, where you're looking internal to your organization for your strengths and your weaknesses. You're looking external to your organization for your threats and your opportunities. And those are the things that once you can fill that matrix in, now you can put together an action plan where you're leveraging your opportunities and your strengths and that you are mitigating your weaknesses and your threats. And that's when you'll have a very, an action plan that really will work on the right things. There's nothing worse than putting a team of people together and they work on the wrong stuff and you end up not seeing the results at the end of the day. So I'm a big believer in using data wherever we can to identify where those opportunities are. But the SWOT analysis really forces you to think beyond what you traditionally have looked at, which is the type of environment that we're in now.
And by the way, Kim, just quickly, you know, been around consultants for a long time. And in the last 20 years, I found people were looking at that old fashioned SWOT analysis as being like outdated, but I am with you. I use it with all my clients. I find unless you're in a room full of, okay, we're all B school consultant wannabes and, you know, sniffing at the SWOT analysis, but for regular folks who have to figure out the complexity of a real business, it is the easiest way to really convey or get out of people's heads what's going on. And they already have the knowledge. They just don't have it organized. So there's a reason why it's a classic. It's an oldie but goodie. I use it all the time. And I was very encouraged to hear you say how strongly you felt about use of it as a tool, because I'm with you. I think it's a fantastic tool.
Sometimes those simple tools that have been around for a long time, I mean, there's a reason why they've been around for a long time. And yeah, I'm a believer of, I think in really my entire career have really believed in employee engagement. And I think some of these tools that companies start to get into are so complicated that it just squashes any kind of employee engagement that you may have. People don't know where to start. They don't understand it. They don't know what you're doing and what's next and which matrix goes where. A SWOT analysis is simple, and that way you can get your experts within your company. You can get them to participate. And then when you move to that action plan and you're looking for buy-in for change, which is sometimes tough to do, these people have been involved in your process the entire time. So now you've got that buy-in and that accountability that people will take on to actually see those changes through. You know, once you get that action plan, that second, and again, it's a traditional tool, but the risk assessment is, I think, a really good one. The engineer in me, again, I like the data. I like the numbers. I've seen a lot of companies, and myself included, when I've worked in industry and we work on something and then we say, oh my gosh, you know, we're not seeing those results. And the risk assessment will help you to prioritize, I think, where you want to put your resources, you know, ahead of time. And I remember when I was a maintenance manager, and I could tell immediately when the Joint Health and Safety Committee had met, because I would get a pile of work orders like this every single meeting. And because it all had the work type of safety on it, it all was supposed to go to the top of the pile. And I don't have the resources to be able to do all this stuff. Every month we're getting all of these, you know, work orders. And in reality, not all of them were a priority one.
Right.
And so that's really the first time I started to use that risk assessment tool, is to say, how do I make sure that I'm working on the right stuff, knowing that if I don't make that change and I don't work on those things, that there's going to be a big impact to the company. And so when you're looking at the probability and the severity of the consequence of not making those changes, it really elevates, I think, the visibility of those types of projects where you can get the support, the resources that you need to have to make those changes that are going to be visible to the bottom line.
And you would think things that have to deal with risk, and manufacturing is a world full of risk. I mean, everything from, you know, OSHA to, you know, what, just running a plant with lots of giant machines doing very dangerous things. And yet it's interesting that needing to prioritize and needing to say maybe, and this, you know, this is also like things have mixed priorities, meaning for safety's sake, replacing this older machine with a newer one would be a good reason to do it. However, it's also four times as productive. It'll do five operations where we used to have two machines doing that. All those things are reasons and opportunities once you have a way of assessing why you're looking at it and what the return might be. The one thing, just if I may loop back briefly to the SWOT for a moment, though, especially I found when I work with smaller companies, the area they have some challenge with, and I'd just like to get your take on this, is really understanding opportunities and threats, because I find more often than not, they are not that market aware. They know what they do. They know what their customers ask them to do, but they're not really looking at the bigger picture, other than the occasional trade show where they meet Larry and Billy Bob again, you know, for every year they meet for breakfast or whatever, but they don't really have the clarity of what's going out in the marketplace to fill out that ONT part of things. How do you help people kind of think beyond maybe what they're comfortable knowing right now?
You know, I'm a believer, and I've even gotten some pushback from senior leaders that I've worked for in the past, but I'm a big believer of getting your suppliers and your customers involved in those types of exercises. Yeah. So whether you're doing a root cause failure analysis, you're doing a SWOT analysis, but when you're looking for improvement, getting those other ends of the supply chain to work with you on that is I think the most productive way that you can have a really holistic plan at the end. Many companies feel uncomfortable doing it because they think that they're just, you know, being so vulnerable that they're showing all of their weaknesses to their suppliers and to their customers, and nobody wants to do that. But I can tell you that most of them, I've never had a supplier or a customer say, no, we don't want to work with you on improvement. You know, they are willing to come to the table. Now, certainly there's going to be some confidential information that you don't want to necessarily throw up there. Right. But by and large, be candid about, here's the challenge that we're having. How can we work together, you know, with our suppliers and with our customers to figure out a solution to this problem that's mutually beneficial for all of us? You know, the suppliers don't want you to be, you know, calling them with these last minute orders saying, oh my gosh, we didn't plan very well for this, and you better get us, you know, this raw material as quickly. They don't want that. The customers don't want you to be saying, oh, sorry, we don't have finished product to give you. So to be saying, here's some of our supply chain issues, we want to know what those opportunities and threats outside of our company, we want to know what those look like. And so I really encourage companies to be vulnerable, expose yourselves to the rest of your supply chain, and ask the same of them, so that you can work together to put together a more holistic plan.
But you said, I think a key thought there is there has to be a spirit of reciprocity.
That's right. Right.
So if you have a you know, very close-lipped supplier, a very close-lipped customer, and you're the only one exposing reality, right, well, it's not going to advance the conversation. And so
correct,
it's probably not every supplier, not every customer, but you can find in your customer base, in your supplier base. And once you model it and you get used to it, you'll probably get better at doing that. And you could, and it'll probably expand that circle over time.
Yeah, I remember one time we had an issue where we had Walmart actually had ordered a lot of end of aisle displays through various reasons. They ended up pulling that order back significantly, but not before I had spent a whole lot of labor and overtime and materials to get these prepared. And so I thought, you know what, that's no good. It's not a good, you know, example of a harmonious relationship that, sure, we're working together. But I remember my boss said, oh, you'll never get them to sit at the table with you. They're too big. They're too strong. You know, they don't really care what your issues are. And I reached out anyway and had their purchasing person who we had worked with on this particular project come to the table. And oh my gosh, the amount of cooperation that we received to say this, you know, we want this to be better for all of us. We want to be a better supplier to you. And we're hoping that you'll be able to give us some more data, you know, on orders so that we're able to know what's coming and when it's coming, we can prepare better. We had a wonderful plan and it really worked well together. So I would say and encourage companies, don't just assume that your suppliers and your customers are not going to want to sit down with you and work this out. And as you said, it's not true for every single one, but when you're looking at having a robust plan and that evolves from a robust matrix where you've got something in every one of those quadrants for you to funnel down into your action plan, you're going to have a much better plan.
Well, that's fantastic, Kim. And Kim, we could keep going on this. Yeah. We are out of time here. So I'm sure people listening are saying, wow, that Kim Wolf really has her handle on this. So if somebody wanted to talk to you, get to know more about you, where should they go?
They could email me. So kwolfleadership@gmail.com. You can also find Kim Wolf on LinkedIn. And my phone number, 519-291-0745. And I look forward to working with anybody and helping. I think this is the time we all need to be linking arms and working together.
Absolutely. Kim, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jose. Much appreciated. Thanks for having me, Jose.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose. If you like the show, hit subscribe and leave us a review to help other people find the podcast. And if you're ready to take the next step in driving intentional growth for your business, come check out what we're doing at valueprop.com. We've developed industry-leading programs and systems to help B2B owners take control of their growth. Until then, thanks for listening to another episode of Business Growth on Purpose.